Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Trending Lemon. I'm Bryce Castillo, your host. This is the show all about social concerns and trending news and quizzes with some very cool folks like my guest today. You might remember him from a few months back. It's Sign. How's it going, Sign?
Hey, I have a voice this time, so that's...
Listeners who's only heard you on that last episode might go, this is not Sign, this is a different guy.
Yeah, it's completely, I mean, yeah, it's just, you can actually understand me. I don't sound like, you know, I'm talking through a blanket, you know.
Well, has anything happened big in your life in these past 2 months?
Well, I got fired.
Oh my goodness.
So much fun. So, hey, I shit happens, and the way I look at it now is, now that I no longer work for Comcast, if you didn't know, I worked for Comcast, now I can watch Cord Killers without feeling like shit, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're happy to have you. You do have a new project you've started since the last time we talked, right? You have a new YouTube channel going on.
Yeah. As you may have heard from, you know, seeing like news reports and things of like people walking around staring at their phones like zombies again, the new Harry Potter Wizards Unite game from Niantic, the guys that made Pokemon Go, is out. And so I kind of ended up right place, right time, making friends with a bunch of people who are like doing, you know, YouTube vlogging of the game. And I ended up starting a channel that's about the storyline and kind of like the behind the scenes kind of lore that's going on in the game. So that's going to be fun.
It sounds like they've put a lot of story into it.
Yeah. So pretty much it's taking place,
is this
right
after
now,
the books?
2019. Yeah. So it's right now, 2019. You've got, you know, Harry, Ron, Hermione, they're all adults. Yeah. And everything. And so it's effectively, there was a mysterious event that happened, and it's knocked all of these magical artifacts and things into the everyday world. And so you, as a wizard or witch, your goal is to track these down in the real world and effectively hide them from non-magical people.
Interesting. Well, check it out. Revelio is what it's called. We'll have a link in the show notes, since there's no you don't have a custom URL just yet, because it's such a new account.
Yeah, it's very, very new. But if you guys all subscribe, then I can get that taken care of very, very quickly.
Yeah, check it out, everybody. So we've got some news stories here. So I wanted to talk about this news story first, because this is a little bit of a related story to what we talked about last week with Scott, and also a few weeks ago with Mike. This is, per the Atlantic's headline, "Welcome to the era of branded engagements." Not necessarily, you know, user engagement, but actual matrimony engagements. So there is a Instagram influencer, Marissa Fuchs at Fashion Ambitionist, who is on Instagram, and over the past like 2 or 3 days as of this recording, her Instagram story, and you go to her story, and it's the thing where like all of the little lines up top look like dots, because there are 100 videos in her story, and so you just keep going clip by clip, is having this whirlwind engagement sort of affair right now. She's going around the world, traveling to different places, following this sort of scavenger hunt puzzle sort of thing that her fiancé, or I guess to-be fiancé, has laid out, all ultimately ending up in Paris, where he will engage her. He will pop the question to her. And I'm saying this as fact, even though she's going through it now, because whether it was Marissa herself or her boyfriend, Gabriel Grossman, who did it, there was a pitch made to marketers, to brand marketers, to sponsor this engagement.
My God. Yeah, this is pretty much like, it's amazing how fast the advertising and joke cycle becomes real life, because you know that right now, literally right now, there is a Klondike bar marketing campaign, which is like, what would you do for a Klondike bar? Would you name your child Klondike? Would you do these different things? And so it's a joke, but I mean, literally, that's what it's become to. It's practically, no matter what you're doing in your life, you can make money off of it.
Yeah. And so different marketers at different brands and agencies got this PDF, which was given to The Atlantic, describing the multi-day stunt, quote, a one-of-a-kind proposal experience for a one-of-a-kind female ambitionist. And the idea being like, well, she's going to go to these different countries, to these different cities, and wouldn't it be great if, you know, she found this necklace to a blank, the necklace, it could be your brand, in a restaurant, it could be your restaurant, you know, drinking your wine or like the opportunities for people to like, even there's a video on her account. I'm going to pull it up so you can see it here. There's a video on her Fashion Ambitionist account that is her boyfriend describing the engagement as he's like swiping around. Here's the first one. As he's swiping around, you see him like walk out of a sushi restaurant, and the sign is very, very prominent in it. I don't know. This is it's.
Mm. The Hets are at it again.
So I don't know. I think in general that influencer culture, influencers, you know, people who are like online and are known for being seen out doing things, I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with that. But I look at this marketing pitch. I look at the idea of like, hey, we're going to do this thing. It's going to be tied to our engagement. You can be a part of it. And that I do think is like gross in that it is selling out a personal part of your life.
Yes. Yes.
And I also think it is basically the goal of influencer culture, right? Like if you are the biggest influencer, you could do this, right? You could sell this, and that would be a level of doing your influencer job. And so I'm wrestling with that, right? Where I think it's okay to be an influencer, but I think this thing that is the ideal influencer goal really sucks.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I mean, I can get it. I get it. I really, really do get it. But like, the thing is that it ends up coming off as ingenuine to the thing that you're doing. I mean, it's just like you're proposing. So technically, if this is like such an engineered thing where it's already fucking set and you're like doing goddamn like, you know, pitches, I'm pretty sure he's already fucking asked her and she's already said yes.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in responding to this news story, Grossman, her to-be fiance, actually, he's saying she doesn't know about the proposal or the marketing element of this, and that it's a social media marketer who is I guess close to the both of them and is doing this. He's also said, and I think this is the part where it becomes, because I think at the end of the day, if you look at it, the story as it is now, it is an oddity, but I do think that this is really the twist on it, is that according to Grossman, I'm going to read this direct from The Atlantic, the trio received no direct payment for Fuchs posts. In fact, he said most brands didn't even respond. Almost all the ones that did were companies that Fuchs already had a good relationship with, like Flywheel, which put on a free private class, and Flywheel, which put on a free private class, and the clothing designer Love Shack Fancy, which sent Fuchs some free dresses. And once you start to get the FTC disclosures involved, what is like the relationship actually here is actually important. You know, if you get paid to do a post, you have to disclose it. This is in the US, you know, if you are a citizen in the US making US money, you have to disclose these sorts of things, right? YouTube has a thing, you've probably seen it, where a little tag that says this video contains product placement. And on the videos that we do, you'll usually see a graphic or you'll see the host say, you know, hey, this is sponsored by this person. Because you have to. You have to tell people that the thing that they're watching also is either is or contains an ad. And most of these posts so far have been Instagram stories, right? The 24-hour disposable video and photo clips. And they don't, to my knowledge, have any of those disclosures. And so what is that, right? Like in this impermanent space, in the space of social media, right? We know that like Instagram posts like, you know, stay on your timeline, those have to be disclosed, right? This is a very
right.
The Kardashians got in trouble with this because they were hawking pills that they were getting paid to hawk, and they weren't disclosing it. You have to disclose these things. But in a world where you have stories, which are impermanent, you know, designed to be temporary, I guess within the letter of the law, would you need to disclose that? And would you be able to adequately do that? And or would anybody be able to catch you if you didn't?
Wow. That is a really fucking good point. It's the thing is it's the would they catch you is the thing. Because that's a really good point. Because, you know, by the letter of the law, from my understanding, you absolutely are supposed to fucking disclose any and every time you effectively have somebody giving you shit to hawk. It's that simple. Yeah, that's a very good point because, you know, by the nature of like Snapchat, Instagram stories, all of that shit, it's just it's there and gone. And I don't know how they would be able to really enforce that.
And take it another level deeper, right? Like stories are kind of a public thing. So that's one thing. But what if you have a private account, or what if you are posting, you know, the close friends feature on Instagram stories? Where you set people who are your close friends, and so when you make a story, they only can be viewed by those people that you specify. Is that the same thing, right? Or is that just telling your friends, right?
God,
a public snap. What if it's not on your Snapchat story, but you send it out to 10,000 people who are your friends on Snapchat? It's the Wild West with influencer and sort of paid product disclosures. And this is a bad look. I think this is a bad look for a thing that I genuinely think is fine, right? There have always been people who have been famous for just being models or just being celebrities, just being socialites. That's always existed. Right. But we've set boundaries and I think we need to define more where those boundaries are, because social media is changing, you know, these things, the environment is changing. Talking about changing, though, I have a story, Sian. I don't know if you know much about the internet in the United Kingdom.
Okay.
But there was there was some legislation just earlier this year, even, that was passed that it would require that websites hosting adult content age verify all of their users.
Yes. I am aware of this.
It was going to go into effect July 15th, about a little less than a month from now. I say was because that deadline has now been indefinitely, or at least will be indefinitely, postponed. First off, it is impossible to enforce. Even if you use a virtual private network, a VPN, you would immediately be IP cleared from whatever this restriction is, right? You could do that pretty easily. There are things even in like browser extensions that will do that.
Yeah.
The other thing is that you would be putting your data in the hands of any of these age verification companies. A handful of companies actually popped up to sort of meet this demand. The most prominent one of this was provided by MindGeek. I don't know if you know MindGeek, but they are the company associated with Pornhub, YouPorn, RedTube, TubeBait. I have a whole list here. Thumbzilla, XTube, GayTube, Babes.com, Browsers, Digital Playground, Reality Kings, Twisties, Wicked Pictures, Playboy.com, and Men.com. I say that so you understand how much of a mega conglomerate they are in the porn industry. Well, as a part of this, they would affect the UK would be effectively creating a new market for age verification technology. And while there are a lot of options that were ready to go into action, there are services Age Checked, AV Secure, AV Yourself, as well as Yodi. MindGeek has their own called Age ID. And if you think of all of those websites that I mentioned that are under or associated with them, forcing users to use their Age ID service, you would probably create a quasi-monopoly.
Yeah.
Forcing all of their users to route their data through this Age ID service. And I actually don't know as of this recording if the actual announcement that the delay has been official or not, but they do expect it to happen in the next 24 hours. And so we don't exactly know which issue it is, right? The fact that you would either have people give their data to a new company to verify their age, or the fact that it would be insanely easy to bypass this block, or the fact that, you know, it would be monopolistic.
I think what most likely happened is, they're sitting, Parliament sitting there, and they're just like, oh, we've really bested them. And then they then pretty much get everything together. And then they're like, okay, let's test these systems. Nathaniel, sit here. Little 13-year-old Nathaniel is sitting there. He's just like, all right, enter your age. No, don't put 18, put your age. No, don't put 18, put your actual age. That's the way that it verifies. I'm pretty sure that something like that is what's going on.
Well, these services actually were going to be pretty in-depth. They were going to either through many, partially because this law was still undefined, not totally defined as of... when was this? Not totally defined as of February of this year, but these were actually pretty in-depth services. You would either provide them a phone number or a credit card or a driver's license, a passport, you know, a form similar to how like Facebook or Twitter will verify your identity. You send them a scan of a real document. Though one of the other options was you could go to a store and buy about $6 or $7 card that would act as a verification, assuming that the store, I guess, IDs you when you buy it.
Right.
And not to mention, like, going from the Sky News reporting here, there were fears of browsing habits being tracked, as well as blackmail and surveillance issues, which I think
absolutely.
Is... Yeah, I mean... especially when it comes to MindGeek, which is an incredibly shady company. It's not just a monopoly, it's also a very shady company. Having all your data, they've said that, oh, well, we won't store your data and we won't use it to advert, you know, we won't keep track of your like browsing habits, but they will have to keep a log of when people log in or, you know, get verified or, you know, their user pings your server, whatever. And that data is not secure, you know, that data, you know, any number of dating sites, porn sites, fucking Ashley Madison, you know, these things get hacked.
Exactly. Yeah. And probably, and I'm not saying anything, but say you're one of these verification companies and somehow your data gets out, you know, on some website database, and then you are very, very good at enforcing that, and you're able to get somebody's information off and to ensure that your information is personally removed as quickly as possible, just pay me $29.99 and I'll make sure that disappears.
Revenge porn. Yeah, absolutely. So it is a good thing that it is a very good thing that this, I don't know, indefinite delay, at least as it's been framed here as of this recording, is happening. You know, this is not a fleshed out plan. And I mean, I don't know. I'm of a very conflicted mind about it, only because, like, yeah, I do think adult content probably should be reined in. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about that later in the program. I do think, like, it probably would not hurt for there to be some separation somewhere, somehow.
Yeah.
But I don't think that this still ambiguous, still seemingly unsecured or nebulous policy is the right way.
We should just have two internets, you know. We'll just have two internets, just two completely separate internets. You'll just have the baby internet and just dicks out everywhere. Dicks everywhere.
I mean, we're kind of seeing, okay, so this is not exactly what we were talking about, but, like, especially with the rise of streaming media, I don't know if you watch, like, Netflix or any of these, like, streaming original shows, but you're kind of seeing that disparity heighten, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at the Netflix, like, the Marvel shows, right? Like, if you watched a Marvel movie, it would be a pretty family-friendly affair, but you look at, you know, Jessica Jones and The Punisher, and
God,
they're very, like, dark and mature, and then also kids programming, right? Like, when Netflix was talking about their slate last year, it was like, we're going to do 100 new things this year. Half of them are going to be for children. But it also, and maybe it's just because, you know, we're adults. Adults report on the news. Adults watch adult things. But I definitely think that you're seeing, especially in terms of online content, more adult-focused content instead of family-friendly or family-applicable content, I guess, is a way to describe it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're absolutely right. And, you know, these kind of premium networks, they kind of, like, that's what they feed off of. And, you know, I still feel very weird about, you know, Arya getting it on, because, I mean, she grew up with it's just it's I don't know how to feel.
Yeah. And so I do think the internet should be safer for children in concept, right?
Yes.
Broad sense, I do think that that's a good goal. I don't think that this is it, and I'm glad to see that they've sort of stepped down away from this policy. So I don't think that this is maybe the right way to do it. In fact, we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about some more about kids on the internet. How about that? Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you like the show, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/trendinglemon. For more information and past episodes, visit trendinglemon.com. We have a big second half of the show coming up for you, so if you like any of the news topics that we talk about, we have a bunch of articles in the description, so check it out in your podcast player. My name is Bryce Castillo. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Brycas, B-R-Y-C-A-S. Be sure to follow Sign on Twitter and check out his new Revelio channel on YouTube. We've got links to both of those in the description. This show is a part of the Diamond Club stream team. Find more shows and join the Diamond Club community Discord at diamondclub.tv. All right, Sian, we're back. I have a very heavy topic. I have a big topic.
Okay.
It is... I have the past few episodes I've wanted to breach it, and it's only gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and I think now is like a time to talk about it, because there are a lot of facets to it. I am, of course, talking about YouTube.com. YouTube is having a time right now.
Yes, I would, if you would call it a time.
So you're pretty up to date with at least the broad strokes of what's going on in YouTube.
Right.
There are multiple different things. Let me talk about these different things. Let me start with the smallest.
Okay.
So there's a YouTube channel called Coffee Break that did an analysis of YouTube's trending page. This is kind of an editor's pick of what's popular on YouTube. So the algorithm, we talk a lot about the YouTube algorithm, and the thing to understand about it is that it's a black box generally. They don't exactly know how it works. They can tell it some things, but generally they give it data and it makes decisions. And this Coffee Break channel did an analysis of the trending tab and found that in the US there is a very strong bias towards traditional and corporate video channels, channels like ESPN, late night programs, Netflix. And what their research found is that the barrier, that the sort of the view count you have to hit to reach that trending top, that trending page, is not the same among channels, and it very strongly favors these corporate, you know, major, I don't know, studio is not the right word, but these very traditional channels.
Commercial.
Yeah, commercial is a very good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Creators, which YouTube constantly boasts as its, you know, bread and butter, oh, creators, have some of the highest barriers to entry here. These are channels that everybody knows of, like PewDiePie, H3H3, Philip DeFranco, like the biggest channels have the highest hurdle to overcome to reach this page, despite the fact that they constantly make content that outperforms the things on the trending page.
Right.
And it makes it so that they never hit the trending page in the United States. They did a same look of a 7-month span from the United States and in Canada, and found that in Canada, these creators were constantly in the trending page, dozens of times. And the Coffee Break channel hypothesized that human curation in the U.S. is involved with this page, which is leading to this bias away from creators to kind of safer, all-audience sorts of videos, right? And it is very weird, because YouTube is constantly doing this back-and-forth leaning of like, well, we love creators, but we're going to lean on our corporate, you know, our corporate content sources. It's a very weird thing. Had you actually heard about this story?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it, and the whole thing is just completely fucked. It's just this right now, with everything YouTube has going on, which we're gonna keep getting into shit. I don't doubt. But with everything that they are getting into, this is like the worst possible time for it to be revealed that, you know, hi, I'm Ted YouTube and I trust the algorithm unless it's wrong.
So that brings us to our next topic. We're going to go to this one because it's pretty much done as far as these topics go. It's at least seemed to come to a completion. This is you've probably seen the big Carlos Maza, Steven Crowder conflict on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, God.
There's a Vox video journalist, Carlos Maza, who went on Twitter and detailed this multi-year history of harassment from conservative YouTuber Steven Crowder. Homophobic references to Maza, doxing campaigns that he was in charge of. And this is a man... Crowder is, who has almost 4 million YouTube subscribers.
He sells t-shirts with slurs about Carlos Maza. It's so overt.
And when Maza noted this on Twitter, it got everyone kind of up and riled at YouTube again, because YouTube has very clear policies that target harassment. And people want the rules that are laid out, or the policies that are laid out, to be enforced as they were. And initially YouTube said, well, we're not looking at the things that have been reported to us. We're not going to take any action at this time. And then, by the way, this is all happening on Twitter. Yeah. First of all, this is like YouTube engaging, like replying to Carlos's thread saying, like, oh, you know, we're not going to take action at this time. And then a few days later, the team YouTube account, that's really where you want to send your stuff, not at YouTube, at team YouTube is where you want to send stuff like this, saying, oh, you know, we're going to demonetize his videos. We're going to demonetize some of these videos because all of YouTube's demonetization story, the entire story around YouTube's demonetization has been around unsafe content, right? Advertisers don't want to be on, you know, fucking ISIS videos, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the problem with that is that demonetizing someone like Steven Crowder doesn't do anything for him. In fact, Steven Crowder even said on YouTube that his videos very rarely get monetized anyway. But the fact that he's been demonetized means that he can sell it to his audience, the people who buy his merchandise, who pay him off of YouTube, to give him more money. He will benefit from that action instead of, I don't know, being treated as the community, I don't know, stain that he is.
Yeah. It's pretty much the whole InfoWars effect. Removing and killing InfoWars just makes it that the people who get InfoWars from other means are being validated that InfoWars is being oppressed by everyone else. He can effectively play off to his people that, oh, I was just speaking the truth, and now that, you know, the big corporation wants to silence me, so buy my t-shirt that has, you know, homophobic slur on it.
Though I will say, in the case, specifically the case about InfoWars, which was pretty routinely deplatformed across the major services, from YouTube, from Apple Podcasts, and all the various podcast directories, it is, at least from an anecdotal point, seemed to work, right? It has seemed to keep InfoWars out of the spotlight. You see less clips of Alex Jones calling the frogs gay. You see less of that. And so I do think it still is a galvanizing force for Alex Jones and his, you know, core base, but the spread is the issue. I mean, look at the way that YouTube is used by tons of content creators. We do podcasts and videos for my work, and more than half of them, we don't expect to make money. We literally are not set up to make money on YouTube from them, because we make money on Patreon, or we make money through brand deals and sponsorships, right? Like YouTube is only very profitable for the very largest creators. And so to someone like Steven Crowder, who just posts stuff on YouTube because that's where people are and that's where people watch stuff, it's not the monetization platform. And so people wanting Steven Crowder's either his videos removed or his channel shut down or his channel features, you know, restricted, are because YouTube is not a monetary platform for him. It is a PR platform. It's a spread platform.
Yeah.
I think YouTube is aware of this, right? Like YouTube knows this. And I think that does tie in a little bit to the previous topic that we just talked about corporate or traditional video content sources being what YouTube wants people to see in the US, right? They want people to oh, check out this US ESPN thing. It's ESPN, so they had to put it on TV, so it's going to be fine to run ads on. But Steven Crowder has 4 million people, and if this was a flat, you know, if that benchmark was flat across for everybody, then you would see videos like his, or you'd see flat earth videos, ISIS videos, recruitment and hate speech videos. So, I don't know, you have these two things playing side by side, where YouTube constantly says it loves creators, but constantly has to rely on corporate partners in terms of what content you see in YouTube.com.
Yeah, I mean, they love creators, and they believe in everything that creators do. They just don't fucking trust creators.
I think in a logistical, a very small way, I do understand it, right? If you're a PewDiePie, right, you don't have any, there's nothing that says PewDiePie has to censor curse words or has to be appropriate for all ages. It's only the fact that he makes gaming content and that a lot of his audience is younger, and that a lot of that audience probably has some sort of monitored viewing habits, right? Parents probably checking in to see, oh, what's this thing my kid is watching? That he does it. But there's nothing saying that, like, you have to be appropriate. And so I get that, but it's a tough thing, these two ideas, right? YouTube loves creators, but also, right, like you said, YouTube doesn't trust creators, and because it can't, because there's nothing in place to say that it should.
Yeah, what YouTube should do is, instead of this kind of content moderation system, what they should do is they should get together with the engineers at Google and then come up with some kind of age verification system. Wow. So that.
Well, speaking of age, so this is the other YouTube topic. This is the other part of this fucking YouTube Hydra that has it has been impossible for me to talk about YouTube on this show because it's a three alarm fire. And here's the third alarm. So YouTube's algorithm is very smart, right? We mentioned it's a black box. You put data in and it decides, okay, show this video to these people, promote this, right, put this on the sidebar, put this on their front page. And it also does what actually a lot of other recommendation engines work. So I'm sure you have a more technical background, Sign, but to explain, maybe if the listeners aren't aware, if you've ever, like, you go to iTunes, right? Let's say you go to iTunes and you load up an album, and you'll see at the bottom, like, oh, similar music by, right? Like, similar artists. That data is not based on any of the content in, say, that album, right? It doesn't listen to it and say, oh, this is alternative rock. Here's some other alternative rock that sounds like it. It is almost always generated by human traffic. And this is the idea of big data, right? Like, people who like this go and listen to this and this and this. They listen to this, and then the next thing they listen to is this and this and this. They look at those very basic lines, but because they have millions of users, they can say, okay, these are the trends. These are the huge trends between these two items. And so that's how you get recommendation services, generally speaking. And so that's partially how the YouTube algorithm works. You look at it, and because if you've never uploaded a video to YouTube, you don't give it a lot of metadata. You know, you tell it what category it is. Maybe it looks at the transcript. If they're using machine learning or machine vision to, like, actually look at frames of video, they would not really be able to do it at scale. So a lot of this is based on what people do. And this is, this next topic is a weakness of that idea. So, YouTube. So this actually kind of went back a little bit to February of this year. YouTube's algorithm does this for every video. It says, hey, you've loaded up this video of Red Letter Media. Here's what we put in the up next box, right? It's another Red Letter Media video, or maybe it's another movie review video, or it's another video essay about films, right? And it tends to look at that based on human interaction. Well, it does that for every video on the website, including videos that pedophiles were enjoying on YouTube. Here we go. So this is a quote from the Wall Street Journal to kind of give you an idea of the scope of this algorithm. YouTube has described its recommendation system as artificial intelligence that is constantly learning which suggestions will keep users watching. These recommendations, it says, drives 70% of views, but the company will not reveal details of how the system makes its choices. And what that means is, at least understanding how basic recommendation engines work, pedophiles, which are going on YouTube and looking at home videos of children, videos created by children, right, with their parents or with the permission of their parents to use YouTube to make content, are creating rings. One study called it the rabbit hole effect, but it's almost similar to, like, web rings or blog rings, if you remember that from old web. The idea of, like, oh, hey, you liked this video of a kid. Hey, here's another video of a kid. And those algorithmic, trails that people were following were really enjoyed by the pedophile community.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just super fucking creepy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other part of this, so part of the rabbit hole effect that I described is not just videos that are similar, often initially, just, you know, these connections initially created by people's searching habits or viewing habits, but it also leads people into more, I don't know, galvanized videos, right? This is kind of how you end up at watching a video about science and ending up on a conspiracy video or like a flat earth video, right? For example, this is another quote from the Wall Street Journal. When they followed recommendations on sexually themed videos, they noticed something that they say disturbed them. In many cases, the videos became more bizarre or extreme and placed greater emphasis on youth. Videos of women discussing sex, for example, sometimes led to videos of women in underwear or breastfeeding, sometimes mentioning their age, 19, 18, even 16. And this is obviously troubling, right? This is the video site. Full stop. This is the site that people go to watch things for free, right? Free, it's not paid like Netflix. It's not a marketplace like Amazon. It's not backed by television companies like Hulu is. And so what do you do about an algorithm whose, you know, stated goal is to increase watch time if the platform also contains child creators as well as child consumers, right? Children like watching videos of children. They watch videos of children playing with shit all the time.
Yeah.
But also so do pedophiles. And what do you do with that?
Yeah, there's no real fix for that. This is an issue that is just systematically kind of bred from that. The only kind of fix that you would have, but it even wouldn't be a fix, would be having some kind of option to fucking filter yourself out of searches. Something like, you know,
oh, don't show spider, me don't, to certain types of users. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's literally the only option, because with usually, like, here, watch. If I go, there's a couple different websites you can go to just to find videos that have no views. Boom. There's a kid's second grade award ceremony.
Oh, sure. No, like, views listed here, but there's an entire, it's a minute long video about a children in a children's classroom, right? And it's innocuous, but it's also, hey, that's a lot of young kids. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, like, this is fucking frightening. But like how long did that take me? Like 20 seconds?
Yeah, basically.
Like, oh my God.
People should be able to have home videos on YouTube, right? People are using people are using YouTube the way that Facebook wishes it people used it, right? It's like, I have a video. I want to send it to my family. I'm going to put it on YouTube because YouTube's free and I have an account for it. So here we go. And I don't know what you do. Apparently, this is a new report from yesterday that YouTube executives are apparently considering just getting rid of all children's content from YouTube.com. That we know that they had the YouTube Kids brand, I believe is what it's called. It's got there's a YouTube Kids app. It's made for kids. It's only kid-friendly content. And they are considering creating a separation between these two ideas, right? Between YouTube.com and YouTube Kids. And I think this is such a drastic move. I had never considered it to be something that YouTube would feasibly do. But the thing that probably stoked it also from yesterday is that the federal government is probably going to investigate YouTube into why it's not protecting children from pedophiles.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much they let the fire fucking like burn them for so long that they're just like, oh shit, I no longer have a leg. Maybe we should do something. But the thing is, though, is that this is not going to do shit. This is all it's going to do is it's going to create a happy place for those very, very depraved individuals to find even more of their shit, even easier. And then to the same mm-hmm. respect, that puts the onus on the fucking creators to fucking self-police and classify where their content's going. Sure. And there's probably not going to be very much money in that new platform, this new YouTube children platform.
Well, true. I mean, children's content is very popular on YouTube. I mean, it's not the high. I mean, the most popular content on YouTube is music videos. Those are the you know, there was a thing that came out today that was like 9 of the 10 top viewed videos on YouTube are all music videos. Yeah. But children's content does very well, right? These like, oh, hey, I'm going to search the wheels on the bus and I'm going to get a 15-hour video that starts with the wheels on the bus and then is just more and more kids' lullabies or kids' songs, just because it's a content mill, right? For actual children, they just need this like a pump and dump video. But even then, I don't know that this necessarily solves this problem. Right. If we're talking about home video or the you know, I think home video is really a big concern. I think, you know, if you're content created by a kid, by the way, YouTube has a very strict policy of 13 and up. If YouTube believes that you are not 13 years old, they have said that they have a very hard line on kicking you the fuck off. But if you have home video of kids, like, what do you even do with that? And I'm not trying to say think of, like, I mean, this is not a think of the kids thing. This is a very, this is a at scale problem, right? This is YouTube. I don't know. This is the YouTube algorithm curating and selectively serving this questionable at best content. I don't.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of leaves me so befuddled and very, I don't know, for a loss of words. Don't know what you do with this. I don't know that this is enough. I don't know that the government is going to have a solution. I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do.
Like I was saying, there's nothing that can be done. Like, here, to my point, you know, yes, you're absolutely right. Children's content is something that is massively consumed, like it's a ridiculous thing where, like, we no longer have kids having a TV be their babysitter. It's a fucking iPad now.
Sure.
And so but the thing is, though, is that the reason why these are so, it's such a big thing, is because of those ads that are being served. That's the reason why the YouTube kids shit is such a big thing. It's because of, like, the ads. Like, for instance, right here, mm-hmm. this is Baby Shark. You've Everyone all heard Baby it Shark. And everything.
Yeah.
But when you go into that and you do that, okay, well,
I have YouTube Premium,
you've got Red.
So I don't see ads.
Yeah. So that kind of defeats that. But the ad, like, mm-hmm. let me
what,
watch.
What is it? What ad? Do
it's
you,
a TikTok yeah, ad. It's a TikTok okay. ad. The types of ads that they're going to serve on the kids' stuff, it cannot be all of the stuff that's being advertised. It's probably, I don't know if it would be Fortnite. I don't know if it would be these different things.
Well, I will say, I think advertisers have pretty strong controls over what types of content they can put their ads in front of, right?
True.
The thing that I've seen a lot from, like, people who make gaming content is, oh, well, we can't have any curses in the first, like, 30 seconds or 60 seconds, or if we do, we have to bleep them, because if an ad person, ostensibly, if an ad person or maybe just the auto-generated caption function of YouTube finds one in those first 30 or 60 seconds, it will demonetize or it will limit ads. And for gaming content, which is also a huge segment on YouTube, that is where that economy of scale actually works from making AdSense money. So I do bet that advertisers have more controls than creators or consumers do. But I'm really lost on what you do here, right? This is a site that you don't have to log in to view things. There's not much stopping you from making content and posting it. And we know that people don't make money on YouTube, or people go off-site to make money on YouTube. And I don't know what you do with this. And YouTube is not older than me. I'm older than YouTube, I'm pretty sure. And do the people at YouTube even know what to do? This is now like a very like weird postulating about it. But does anybody know what to do about this? And I'm pretty sure the answer is no. I don't know what he knows what you do about this. Do you make it so that only 18-year-olds can make videos? That seems stifling.
Yeah, but then to the same respect, you know, sure, you make it so that 18-year-olds are the only ones that can make things. Well, little Billy, entering your age, not 18. No, put 13. That's how old you actually are. Nope, don't put that. Mm-hmm. You know, what can you do? There's nothing you can.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know what YouTube does next. You know, we talked about the Steven Crowder, Carlos Maza thing, and the only reason that was not the biggest topic and part of this is because Susan Wojcicki, I'm never going to be able to pronounce her name, Susan Wojcicki, the head of YouTube, basically said, yeah, that was a hard decision. We're not changing anything about it. You can go set Crowder's because we're not changing anything about that. And I don't expect them to change their mind on that. But there are so many different angles. I wouldn't want to be someone who works at YouTube right now. I wouldn't want to be that person.
Especially, you know, you have the entire company, like all of their queer and gay individuals revolt and nothing comes of it. That mm-hmm. things aren't going to change.
This is, it is unfortunate that this is a footnote, but yeah, there are stories from the, you know, because Google is so big, they have inside community groups and they're, what are they called? Queerglers or something like that?
Yeah.
For their LGBTQ Googlers, they're basically saying, hey, this is bullshit. That is just a footnote. The people inside Google are also not happy with this. But that's Google, right? Which is a bigger thing than YouTube, which is just a smaller part of a larger company. So it's very difficult. All right, we have to get to another topic. We've got to get to another topic.
Yeah. This is just getting way too depressing.
So I have something that might make you happy. I don't know. Okay. I'm actually not sure. I don't know. I'm going to show you here. We've got the screen share on. I'm going to show you a flyer for an upcoming festival. Are you a festival person? Do you like festivals?
A little bit.
You know, music festivals. So there's a new festival, and it's all the rage. I'm going to show you right here, the Metarama.
Oh my God!
What do you see on this? On this lineup.
So we're seeing Marshmallow, who famously headlined in Fortnite.
Right.
We've got Ninja, the very famous Fortnite player, who just recently, he's actually a very famous Fortnite player. He just spontaneously decided, because he's friends with so many like rappers and musicians, that he's going to just be a musician now. And so like he came out with like an EDM album spontaneously. We've got Logic. We've got Jacksepticeye, whom I didn't know he fucking did anything. Maybe he's just going to play games on the screen. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Snoop Dogg, Soda Poppin. You know, we've got Dr. Lupo, and you know, you've got, this is such a crazy, crazy like mismatch of everything. We've got Lindsey Stirling, you know, playing
the famous
violinist.
Yeah.
Rhett and Link.
That's right. And there, so this is Metarama. This is the gaming and music festival. This is coming to Las Vegas in October. And this is a new experience, I guess, is a good way to describe it. This is a new festival experience. This is a two-day event in October, and it is, yes, a music festival, but they're also doing tournaments, cosplay. They're going to have an arcade. They have drones and also streaming. And so half of this list is YouTubers or streamers, you know, Ninja famously, Jacksepticeye, Soda Poppin, Nick A30, Doctor, like half of this list is YouTube people or streaming Twitch people, whatever.
Oh, and then that's surprising. At the very bottom, it says special gaming only appearance by Imagine Dragons. So they couldn't
really get him for the music, huh? Could they?
they couldn't pay that fee.
And so this is a really interesting thing because we've seen, we just had E3 happen, and the report out of E3 is that because of the way that the E3 as a physical expo is changing, it's becoming more public facing, right? You can just buy tickets to E3 now, but also less companies are showing up, or more companies are doing off-site things, or the companies that are coming to E3 are doing less new and exciting things, right? They're less likely to show you new, unannounced, or unveiled things, right?
Right.
It's. I mean, there are a lot of Fortnite booths at E3 today,
right?
And with the rise of things like PAX, which happens fucking four times a year at this point, local conventions, Comic Cons, and things. This seems like a very interesting way of tackling that gaming vibe, right?
Right.
By monetizing gamers and streamers, and also the music that they like or that they listen to, right? Electronic music is pretty closely tied to gaming. I don't know. This is an interesting thing. I don't hate it.
Yeah, I can see where they're getting, because they're trying to, they're really trying to really ride on the coattails of the whole kind of con experience, yet at the same time, you know, try to make it a music fest. I can see it working.
Yeah.
All I have to say though is shit. I really, really, really need to see if I can get the money together to go to Las Vegas to go to this just because of Carrie Pam.
Because Carrie Pammy Pammy is on the list. Yeah, I just noticed that LeMaitre is on the bottom of this list also.
Oh, shit.
Like,
yeah.
I kind of could maybe go to this. I would really be interested in seeing also what this looks like, because their website, this is just announced. This is a hot topic today. And so there's not a lot of like, what this really means. They're saying that they're going to have two stages, which I guess over 2 days, you've got the music acts, you've got gaming acts. There's also like two big like Overwatch. They're not like league matches, but they're exhibition matches with real Overwatch League teams, I guess. And they're doing a big like all day amateur LAN party, a bunch of free play stuff. I think you can make this work, but It's weird. I would love to see any news coming out about this thing, because I think there's an audience for this, right? If I went to PAX and there was a music, if there was a bigger music presence, that would be cool. Or if I went to ACL and there was more comedy or streamers there, that would be a cool thing. So maybe it's going to be peanut butter and chocolate.
Hey, maybe this will work. Maybe this will blow things out of the water, and then people will realize that, you know, sure, let's, you know, have Kitty Plays on the same stage as Little Yachty.
Right. We'll just do it. And
yeah.
And maybe I can imagine a world where, like, so it's 2 days, right? I can imagine like in the early day but I don't see any of these gamer people being on one of these stages. I think there's a music only stage, and it's going to be the music acts, and that's going to be 2 days of that. And then the other stage is going to be these Overwatch tournaments and maybe some of the bigger gaming names here. Because the other thing is, like, all these YouTubers will figure out a stage show, right? Some comedy sketch thing. So I bet that they're on the second stage. There's, like, a streamer zone, quote-unquote streamer zone, where you can play with the streamers who are there. So I bet some of these names are also in that not stage area. But it's weird. Do you want to play a little game right now about this?
Sure.
How much do you think the tickets for this two-day event are? We're talking general admission, baseline, two-day tickets.
Two-day tickets.
Mm-hmm. This is at the Las Vegas Festival Grounds. So I think it's close to the Strip.
I'm going to say $350.
$350. Okay, that's a little cavalier. It's $150.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is pretty reasonable, actually.
Yeah, that is pretty reasonable. I was thinking like they were probably gonna be like, "Look at us, we're super super crazy luxurious because you know we're in Las Vegas and everything. We got Diesel. Do you know who Diesel is?
It's Shaquille O'Neal.
That's right, it is. It's Shaquille O'Neal. I'm looking at this poster, and so like everybody has like these big white bold names, and it says Diesel, and then it has a fucking quotation Shaquille O'Neal right next to it. Just, because fucking
no one knows like, he's
nobody
got Diesel.
Fucking knows.
Oh Jesus. So I don't know. This is a neat thing, and $150 is like not crazy.
No,
at least
not
for like GA. So that's
for
a little bit
for a 2-day ticket. For a 2-day ticket, that's because see, I'm thinking like it like 170 something a day, and then like you do that. But like 150 for the whole thing,
and
that's
I think
not bad.
I think that makes. I'm very surprised about Carrie Pammy Pammy because she is a Japanese artist. She is a Japanese pop artist. And it is, I think it's weird for this to be a stop that she makes in the US. But, you know, these YouTubers and streamers are probably pretty cheap, honestly. I think there are some very cool names on this list, but I also don't think that they would be like the more expensive names or highliners at Coachella. I don't think anyone lower than Alan Walker on this list. I don't think anyone except the top four musicians on this list would get very high prominence at a Coachella.
True, true, true. But all I have to say here, and just to circle back, you know, I know you said that this is a very weird stop for her, but seriously, are you going to tell me that this is the weirdest thing you've ever seen Carrie Pamu Pamu do?
In a business sense, yes. I'll say in a business sense, this is a very weird thing. I have one last topic here. I want to end this on a interesting, fun, I'm going to say fun question mark note. We don't talk too much about politics on this show. In fact, I'm very aware of the hole in this the content of this show, not talking about the migrant crisis. But apparently there is something good coming out of Congress, or at least the Senate. Apparently there's a new bill that has passed the Senate, or at least has bipartisan support in the Senate, that would bring some healthcare reform to America. This would end basically the practice of surprise billing. Do you know what surprise billing is?
Yes, I do. I have seen some very interesting things end up in my mail. Yes.
Yeah. So the idea of surprise billing is where you get taken to a hospital. And if you are, especially in an emergency situation, you're not necessarily in a state to have the most agency over who sees you and make sure that everyone is in your network, including the fact that like you could go to a hospital that is in your network, but get seen by a doctor who's not in your network and still get charged out of network prices, higher prices because your insurance company doesn't have a deal with that doctor.
Right. And in fact, like, there are so many times in which they actually do that on purpose just to drive up their own, you know, profits, because usually, you know, with the insurance providers, they're going to say, hey, this is all we're going to pay and we are contracted and this is how much we are giving you. And they don't have any say over that as a hospital organization. But if you just so happen to have, you know, this contractor that isn't like a permanent resident there in the hospital, they're just working there because you put out a call for temp work and they just so happen to not be in network. That's something that they do.
So the bill has a few parts to it. So if the idea will be that this ends the practice of surprise billing, of out of network billing for people who kind of don't really get the choice. But the question is, well, the hospital is a business and they're going to have some agency over how much they charge. The idea will be that the bill is tied to the median in-network fee for treatment, so that if you are surprised, treated by an out-of-network doctor, that the amount that you pay could be capped at what people pay on average for the same treatment in network.
That's beautiful.
This is a quote from this BuzzFeed News article. Doctors and hospitals will also be banned from balance billing patients if they think they are due more than what the insurance will pay them. So the idea of
really?
The surprise. Yeah. So the idea of the surprise mail showing up in your door saying, oh, actually this $60 ibuprofen we should have charged you more for that. So you have to pay that. And this is great. This has bipartisan support in the House and the Senate. I think right now they both have slightly different versions of the bill, and so they have to kind of consolidate. But they're pretty close together. It also outlaws hospitals from it forces some hospital networks to not say, oh, we have 10 hospitals in this city, and so you have to take all of us or none of us, which can reduce the amount of coverage or the amount of locations that an insurance company can cover. It also, here's another quote, outlaws hospitals from negotiating clauses that prevent insurers from steering patients towards cheaper healthcare options.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, do you know the whole thing with that? They're pretty much.
Are we talking about like generic, like being pushed away from generic medications?
So it's not so much being pushed away from generic medications. The Hippocratic Oath obviously is saying we will not refuse to treat a person that's doing no harm. But the fucked up way that this legally works is, say you go to Hospital A, right? Mm-hmm. Hospital A is out of network. So now you're going to there and they are this expensive option. But that doctor, whom actually has residency in both hospitals A and B, knows that Hospital B would be in network. But because they're currently working at Hospital A, it's per the Hippocratic Oath, it is considered refusing service for me to say, hey, it would actually be cheaper if you go to this other hospital. It's effectively turning someone away from treatment. And that is the most fucked up thing about the whole thing, because there are so many doctors that they know this information. They want to give this information because they actually do genuinely care and want to fucking heal. But they can't.
Yeah.
And this law seems to actually address that, which is fucking amazing.
Yeah, I'm very, very. I don't know. This is great. This is great. This is the Lower Healthcare Costs Act of 2019, and it might be the only like significant health reform of this administration, to be honest. It's actually funny. There's a quote here from Senator Mike Braun, an Indiana Republican, that BuzzFeed News has a quote from. I've warned industry that time is running out. They know that the other option is Bernie Sanders and Medicare for all if they don't get their act together, which I think is a very strong, like the growing wave of support for Medicare for all, or, you know, single payer or universal health care, you know, these various different major reforms to the way that healthcare and insurance care works in America, with those being on the horizon, it is kind of shocking that the healthcare industry is not better still. Every dealing that I've ever had with the healthcare industry has been nothing but frustrating, right? I don't know. I pay so much in healthcare, but I get no preventative stuff covered, right? I don't get any vision stuff covered, even though I need contacts and glasses, right? But I also shouldn't use my insurance for that because it's cheaper, because I'm never going to hit my deductible, and they can give me a cash discount instead of like an insurance rate. So yeah. I don't know. It sucks. The healthcare in America fucking sucks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Real quick, you want to do a quiz really quick?
Oh, sure.
So we have a quiz here from Louis de Valle, a staff writer for BuzzFeed.com. Ask the genie for 3 wishes and we'll predict your immediate future. I don't know what you would... I mean, I guess maybe a new job would probably be something you would...
Yeah, I'd really, really like some employment. But let's see if BuzzFeed can get things right. Let's see.
All right. What's your first wish? To become a billionaire, to become super famous, eternal youth, to have superpowers, to have a magical closet, or world peace?
Being a billionaire probably would be really nice, seeing as I've got a single paycheck coming and don't know what's happening after that. No worries.
Yeah. I mean, billionaire, I mean, people have talked about like the wealth of having $1 billion is incredibly hard to imagine, right? You know, the idea of like a 1,000 millions is like unable to comprehend on a human level. You know, but there we go. You can join the Jeff Bezos club. How about that? You're going to be friends with Jeff Bezos. All right. Second wish. All right, here we go. Immortality, to be able to eat what I want and still have an amazing body, to become a royal. So like a English monarchy or royalty, to reverse the effects of climate change, to have the ability to travel in time and space, or to have perfect health for the rest of your life?
Well, seeing as pretty much everybody, you know, has great health until they die, I think the best thing for me to do would be to reverse the effect of climate change, because I was out there playing a game. And
oh, you're Harry Potter?
Hot. Yeah, it was fucking hot.
Over immortality.
Well, the thing is, though, is that, like, I would think that, you know, while that would be really fucking cool for maybe like 100 years or so, you're just going to be fucking like alone, man. You're going to be like, you know, if you make a fucking relationship with a person, all that's going to happen is you're going to get attached to somebody and watch them fucking die, man. Yeah. I can't do that. I mean, that's fucking morbid, but shit. Yes. That's like, that's what fucking happens.
Yeah. That's a story trope that's been broached multiple times, right? Like vampire stories or Lord of the Rings with the elves and stuff.
Right.
It's very romantic, though, right? The idea of like outliving your partner by thousands of years. There's something tragically romantic about it. I don't know. All right. Well, let's see. All right. Let's do your third wish here. What is your third and final wish? To travel to outer space, to have emotional stability, to be able to see the world, to have unlimited access to food, to conquer the world, or to live in a palace? Very, very weird range of options in this one.
But maybe I think of all of those things, to have emotional stability.
Really? See, this is the most ambiguous one for me. What does that mean? Just like if you have depression, it's cleared up. It's magics away.
There's so much that, like, shit is like a fucking emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm good right now because, you know, hanging out with friends is always something fun, but still, like, it's just like life is fucking hard.
I will say, from your your three wishes were to become a billionaire, to reverse the effects of climate change, and have emotional stability. I think you really ran the gamut in terms of, like, practical wishes. I mean, becoming a millionaire effectively gives you a lot of these different options.
Exactly, right? You don't need to do all of these other things, because if you've got the money, then you, if you want to fucking travel to outer space, you can fucking do that. So
get as much food, get to see the world, whatever that means ambiguously. Exactly. Conquer the world, live in,
that's the whole idea. Like, fucking it, you know, get the money, then fucking, like, heal yourself and heal the fucking world.
Oh my goodness, so altruistic. All right, let's see what your immediate future is. You got, you're about to have a very wild night out.
I'm totally gonna have a wild night out. That's is that like Gadget from fucking the Gizmo? That's right, Gizmo from Gremlins. Fucking
yeah, the gif is fuck out. Definitely a gremlin. So this is one where I don't quite see the correlation here. I think
really
I don't see. I may be the billionaire, but becoming saving the climate and your I don't know why it gave you that.
That's right.
None of this makes sense.
Shots.
All right. Well, hey, Sign, that's it for the show. Thank you so much for joining me today as we
absolutely
went down a veritable rabbit hole of news topics. What should people check out? They should check out the new channel, right? Revelio.
After this show, I will immediately set up revelio.sign.com so that that's that's a thing. But if you go to sign, S-C-Y-N-E.com, you can always see all of the shit that I'm working on and just about this and that. And also, if you know somebody that has need for, like, anybody that, like, can do, like, technical or support work, cv.sign.com. I'd really like to get that out there.
Yeah, check Sign out. I mean, you built, you know, the whole fake coin sort of crypto, the fake slash real cryptocurrency for the Diamond Club, like the new Belt Bet application. Like, you have a lot of technical skills. Everybody check him out if you're looking for some technical hands. How about that?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. It's fun. I mean, I had to take some time out of my really, really busy schedule, but you're absolutely worth it.